We need to create additional metaphors. And in creating that, those additional metaphors, we will create more inclusivity, and more of us can engage in creating justice in the world. And as I wrote this, it became obvious that I was overly ambitious in addressing two different issues of identity and community and oppression. So as I encourage us to expand our metaphors, I will end this part of the sermon, but encourage you to truly remember and lean in to the fact that anytime we speak about any aspect of identity, it applies to all of them. When we engage in looking at how our language is ableist, those same pieces apply when our language might be racist or heterosexually based or narrowly gender defined. So thus endeth the service on ableism. Now that we're all on the same page, I returned yesterday from Summer Institute. Still have my orange band on. Summer Institute is a gathering of Unitarian Universalists from all around the country. It is an intergenerational gathering of itty-bitty Unitarian Universalists and middle-aged Unitarian Universalists and youth Unitarian Universalists and more experienced Unitarian Universalists and everybody in between. I worked all week on this service, in addition to being at Summer Institute, emailing Marion with the order of service and the lovely folks that are helping me pull this together. And I saw this poster on the very first day of Summer Institute and said, oh, that would be perfect. It was part of the raffle. And so since the raffle funds went to support the scholarships at Summer Institute to increase the inclusivity, I put in a few. And we have it here this morning. This is a poster for the Women's March that was actually designed by one of our former youth who is now a young adult. This is the amazing piece that led me to how we might start this time together. So go ahead. Because this is the truth that I believe we all share and can ground this time together on. This community raises amazing youth. Yes? Absolutely. These particular five youth were at Summer Institute, and they were bridging from the youth community into the young adult community. Our congregation provided 25% of the youth that were bridging this week. Our youth do amazing research, they advocate for justice, they receive full rides to Ohio State University sometimes. Bias, I admit, I think our youth are the best, but I think your home congregation should be biased just like I think your parents should be biased for you too. Our youth are great in large part because this community loves them, because this community supports them, encourages them to follow their passions and to fully express themselves. We start this at a very early age. Many of you know Emma and knew her when she was 2 and 3, coming to this congregation where the rule in our house was, in the winter, your arms and legs must be covered. How they were covered was her choice. That they were covered was my choice. One Sunday on the way to church, she had a pair of flower tights, a different flower turtleneck, a flower sundress, that definitely wasn't quite the same, a pair of fairy wings, and a tiara. We stopped somewhere along the way, on the way to church, and somebody said, "You're going to church? What will they say?" I said, "They'll tell her she's fabulous, and some of them may even ask where she got her little sparkly shoes and whether or not they come in grown-up sizes." In part because of this, because of the love and support and freedom, more of our youth identify as gay or lesbian. More of our youth identify as bisexual. More of our youth come to learn that they are transgendered and that their gender expression doesn't match the body that they were born into. The youth are leading a conversation about gender identity and gender fluidity. So what is gender? It isn't sex. Gender is a social construct. In America, we pretty much have two. But if you go to Thailand, there are seven. And if you look at some Native American communities and cultures, they had five or six or eight or all sorts of different understandings. So gender is a social construct. And we in America have a very binary understanding of this. You either get to be a girl or you get to be a boy. And so our youth and young adults have been building language because they are engaging with this notion of identity and gender. They chafe at the limitations that society places on their gender. Boys don't get to cry or play with babies. Girls have to do both. Because they see the harm that's created by this binary and want more inclusive language as a social justice issue. On an institutional level, they have invited us into this work. So, in your hymnals in the beginning, there is a list of our principles and a list of our sources. And at General Assembly this year, we voted about changing the second source. You'll see it at the top of your order of service. One of our sources is on the prophetic words and deeds of women and men, is how it reads in our hymnal. The women fought hard for that. When we were crafting our sources, it was completely acceptable and expected that we would be lifting up as a source of Unitarian Universalism the prophetic words and deeds of men, and of course everyone would understand that women counted too. We had some forward-looking female ministers who said, oh, wait a minute. This is not who we are as Unitarian Universalists, and this is not who we are called to be. And we will not only list men and women, we are going to challenge folks to think about women and men. And so that is what we did. But this year, young adults engaged and encouraged and advocated and went out and got the necessary congregational support to bring forth to the assembly, changing the language to the prophetic words and deeds of people, because they knew in their hearts that it's not just men and it's not just women, that it's people regardless of how they understand their sex or their gender or their identity, that we look to for encouragement. That effort to change the language of the second source requires typically three votes, because Unitarians don't do anything fast. First, we have to vote to send it to a study commission. Then the study commission brings it back to the assembly, and we have to vote on it. Do we really want to change that language? And then we're not sure that the people at that assembly really understood Unitarian Universalism, and so we're going to vote on it again the next year too, just to make sure. The assembly felt so strongly that this was necessary and right, that they used something that doesn't get used that often. When they voted to send it to the study commission, they took a second vote that was over 85% that said, we can bypass the study commission. We know that this is grounded in our faith and that this will count as the first year of the voting, and so it's going to return next year to the assembly to receive its second vote. And if that assembly accepts it, we will have just changed our source, because it has that complicated process, because we're really unique. Our principles and sources are in our bylaws. They are filed with the state of Massachusetts. They are in a section called C bylaws, which were the consolidation bylaws. So the Unitarians wanted to make sure that the Universalists didn't exactly change that on their whim and on their own, and the Universalists wanted to make sure the Unitarians didn't, like, take over the shop either. So this is how we've engaged it on an institutional level. But we also engage it on a personal level. When we choose our names, when we choose our pronouns, it is an invitation for you to see that person as they want to be seen, to fully acknowledge the breadth and depth of their humanity. In fact, at General Assembly, we even have our pronouns on our name tags, because it's hard work. It's not easy work. And we are going to get it wrong. Let's be honest. Unitarian Universalists hate being wrong, right? I hate being wrong. And I'm fairly confident some of you do too. It's not comfortable. And we're going to get called in, and we're going to get called out. I am so grateful for folks who have invited me in, who, when I've made a mistake, say, "Deborah, I really prefer they." And I'm like, "You're right, I'm sorry. I'm gonna redouble my efforts yet again." And I've also been called out. At General Assembly, I was walking down a hallway with someone that I knew, and it was Saturday. And for those of you who haven't attended General Assembly, by Saturday, you're lucky if you are still vertical and upright. I knew this person. They were in the middle of transitioning, but they hadn't had their surgery. They weren't taking hormones at this point. And I misgendered them. And it was Saturday at General Assembly, and this person had been misgendered hundreds of times in those 4 days. Hundreds of times that people in their beloved community were supposed to love and affirm and lift up, and they had been not acknowledged for who they saw themselves to be. And wow. Did I get called out? And today, I am still in relationship with this person. We have acknowledged that it was probably not the best day for either of us then, but we're in this together to go forward together. Some of us have been using he and she for decades. It's hard. But categories only exist so that we can have an easier way to engage in the world, and we can reshape them. When we have known the person who's making the request and we've known them for a really long time, it can be even more challenging. And so it's important to learn that we are going to be making mistakes and not be deterred. We must persist. In fact, while I was at Summer Institute on Friday night between the hours of midnight and 2, while I was working on the slides for this gathering, I had the privilege of being in a room of parents. And one of those parents correctly gendered his child every time he referred to them. This was an act of love. This was not that it was easy. He shared that when this child came forth and announced that they were homosexual, we're Unitarian Universalists, that's good. When that child came forth again and said, "Oh, now I'm thinking I'm bisexual,"
He was like, okay, we'll figure that out together. And then came, I really do not have an alignment within myself about the ideas that our society has for what girls are and with who I am. I would like to be called they. That sent their family for a loop. It was really hard. But over the course of the last 2 years, this father, now almost without forethought, uses they when he refers to his child. I was touched. I knew that the work that that took, and I was in awe of the gift of love that he was giving his child by acknowledging the full, true breadth of who they were. To be honest, if I had been raised now instead of 30 years ago, I don't always do things the way girls are supposed to do them. I might be willing and be wanting and needing to think about how I might be able to break out of that small construct we have taken. You heard Jason talk about intent versus impact. So the intent of standing on the side of love isn't to relegate people who are in wheelchairs. But the impact was that for some of those folks. The same thing happens with us and gender pronouns, and the same thing happens with our buckets. When we use the wrong pronouns for folks, it's taking a little bit of water out of that bucket. And when it happens every day, over and over, that bucket gets depleted. This is not about political correctness. I just need to lay that out there. This isn't about the right words or being approved of by whoever is deemed to decide what that is. This is personal. This is about loving and acknowledging the human being that is in front of you. We do this work. I work on pronouns and trying desperately to use the ones that folks ask for, even though I don't, all the time. We do this because of our principles, to affirm the inherent worth and dignity of people. We do it because we each have experienced the harm of not being acknowledged for the full, complicated selves that we are. We do it because we love our youth and our fellow congregants and are trying to love the world. We do this because we need beloved community to support our own journey. Grateful that we are part of this community and that this community is grounded on universal salvation. We do not believe that anything. Revelation is not sealed. There is always an opportunity to delve into deeper understanding and deeper acknowledgement. And we begin again in love. And thank goodness for that. With that in mind, and because you know I'm going to make you sing more than you've ever sung at any service in this worship center, I invite you to remain seated while we sing to one another a commitment, if you're willing, on being on this path together. The tune will be familiar, but the words not. Are you going to be open? Are you going to be willing? Who will you tell about being beautiful?